All right. So I turn to the screens because we're going to be closing up our guardrails series. Next week we begin our series on the first three chapters of Revelation, and it should be a great time. And so today, let's take a look and see where we are here on guardrails, because guardrails are everywhere. They do help us in our situations where we find our lives in peril sometimes, or in jeopardy, and a guardrail is there sometimes to save us. That's the concept behind this. What are things in our lives that we can kind of protect ourselves from spinning off of the path of life? And so that's kind of the heart behind it. We've done that for the last 4 weeks. All of it starts within the book of James, and we'll close the same way. So James chapter 4, verse 13 is where we'll begin. And James, I think if you capture the heart of what James is doing, it'll make sense what he's saying, because I feel like when I'm reading James, it's with some urgency that he writes. So imagine you don't have your own easy way in which you communicate back 2,000 years ago. You write a letter, and you don't get to go and speak to everybody. So you write this letter, and you try to capture as much in there to communicate life, communicate living in God's presence. You try so hard. So if you read through James, you can see how it almost feels like he's sometimes just jumping from topic to topic with some urgency. So right here, I hear it again. He says, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make profit." Now, this scenario right here, which we look at and talk about, this idea of making some money, you're going to go into such and such a town and make a profit. Now, you could quickly say, I'm not sure exactly what's going on here, but you get the idea, right? But it's helpful. I looked up kind of to find out what was behind the heart of this, and you'll see it right here where he says, here again, this is William Barclay writes, here again is a contemporary picture in which James' readers, not you and myself, but people of James' day who read his letter, would recognize, in which they might well see their own portrait. The Jews were the great traders of the ancient world. And in many ways, that world gave them every opportunity to practice their commercial abilities. Why? Because it's a valuable thing to have in a city. This was also an age of the founding of cities. And often when cities were founded and their founders were looking for citizens to occupy them, citizenship was offered freely to the Jews. For where the Jews came, money and trade followed. So the picture is of a man or a woman looking at a map. He points at a certain spot on it and says, "Hey, here's a new city where there are great trade chances. I'll go there, I'll get on the ground floor, and I'll trade for a year or so, and I'll make my fortune and come back rich." That's the essence behind maybe this. So you get this feeling like, come now, those of you who say today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and make a profit. He continues. In verse 14, he says, "Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? You're like a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes." Whew. Boy, doesn't he just take the wind out of your sails, right? Kind of a bummer. But he's doing something very intentional here. And then he finishes it off. He says, "Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil." So to kind of grab hold of this, just in its most simple form, let's just look at a couple things to look at it, and then we're going to unpackage it. Because straightforward, I think this will help help us kind of move on from here. And so apparently there's a growing problem, or an ongoing problem. Apparently in James' day, people would commit to the faith, maybe make sure that they're all committed to God and they're a part of this community. But James could see that what happened often was somebody was triggered by the opportunity to get money quickly. So in other words, they would just like, yes, I want to follow God. I want to follow his leading. I want to follow God's leading. But then like when this spark would, you know, like a fireworks in the sky, like, oh, hey, look there. And just run off on their own will. That's what he's trying to grab hold of. So he's trying to say there's this problem that we have, that they have. I wonder sometimes if we don't share that. Oh, 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 look, wow, I'm going to run off to that thing. There's then secondly, so he tries to do is he tries to create a larger reality. In other words, you know, like if you ever want to bring somebody into the picture real quickly and give them some perspective, just drop a bomb on them and say, well, you know, you're going to die, right? When I was a kid, I used to, lived near the Mississippi River. And my dad had this unbelievable, I can't say it's a gift, this ability to strike fear into the hearts of his children. Because if, you know, any time there was a river, my dad would almost get this voice like, son, you always need to be very careful around a river, right? And then you're like, ooh, why, right? And you're like, is a monster there? I'm not sure. Because there's an undercurrent. And even the greatest Olympic swimmers, Rob, have been caught in those currents and died. I mean, like, wow, so much for the view, right? And I'm backing up. It's this strikes fear. Well, I think that's what James is doing a little bit, like creating a reality. Yes, it looks beautiful, it looks great, but honestly, you've got to remember, life is kind of fleeting. And you're going to go racing off on your own directive, trying to get serve yourself, and he's trying to create a bigger reality, saying you need to be careful of that. And finally, he insists, or he provides an opportunity or an alternative. He says, instead, live now. Live with God's leading. That's what this whole thing is about. It's about you following God's lead. That's what this is about. So again, apparently you're all like, you know, have you ever been to the beach? And I don't know how it is, but you're just like, crack open the bag of chips. And you're like, how did 700 birds know to come here, right? All right, you just, how did this happen? And every kid has to do it. They're like, oh, can I feed the birds? Right? And you're like, no, right? Because it just turns crazy. All right, that's what this is like. People are like, yes, I'm flying. I'm going through life. I love God, but what is that, chips? And we fly off to the next thing. He's saying, stop. You've got to pause because life is fleeting. Now, given all that, I must ask you a question. Come on, is that good? I found that, for those of you listening online, it's a mustache. I mustache you a question. I tell you what, I found this. I said, I've got to put this in here, no matter how ridiculous it is. I mustache you a question. The question is this, can we relate to that situation that James is putting up there? Can we relate to it? I mean, we don't run off to cities as like in the way that they do, but can we relate to the scenario that he's posing here? Do we find ourselves turning and quickly forgetting God's leading in our lives and racing to something that we want an end result to real quickly? Or do we make choices based on some sort of outcome we're expecting without even consulting God? Can we relate to this? Which would lead to the next question, and why would we want to pursue the future so desperately? What is it about the future that we want to pursue so desperately? I mean, is it for money? I suppose. Could be. I would propose it's something deeper. I would propose it's something to do with control. We somehow find ourselves wanting to control the outcomes of our lives, don't we? Which then leads to this question, why do we want to control the outcomes of our lives? And I put outcomes because it's not just one thing, it's all kinds of things. Why do we want to control the outcomes in our lives? I will give you 15 seconds to think about it. You don't have to raise your hand. You don't have to say anything. Please don't, because I won't hear you. But why do we like to control the outcomes of our lives? Just take a few seconds and think about that. And now I'm going to go a little longer because you're so uncomfortable. Why do we like to control the outcomes of our lives? Is it because we fear something? I would say yes. We fear the outcome of something bad will happen. And so we set off and try to lay out as much as possible our future plans to what? Avoid negative situations, to avoid painful situations, to avoid awful situations. Right? We try in every way possible to make sure everything is laid out. So when James is talking about when you go to this or that city, yes, it seems like we're just running off for money. But at the heart of it, deep, deep underneath it is what? It's always wanting to control the outcome of our future. So control, which I think is driven by fear. It's interesting about this. It's fascinating when you really get into the human psychology of it, the way that we act. When you are called at the same time to be a Christ follower, you suddenly find yourself in some sort of duel. You're on the edge of something, standing there in a face-off. What are you facing off against? Trust and faith. You're in some gunslinger moment. Every time that you find yourself trying to control the outcomes of your situations, leaping into situations that you hope will somehow project you into a healthier and better situation, we find ourselves doing this, and suddenly, unless somebody exposes, we might not even know this, but we're in a face-off with what it's like to trust God completely. Jesus, in his teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, puts forth this statement. He says in chapter 7, verses 9 and 10, he says, "Or which one of you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent?" And then he goes on to say, of course you wouldn't do that, fathers and mothers, to your children. How much more then, he says, how much more then would God provide for you? Would he do that to you? Would he offer you and try to sink you something, give you something awful? Saying no. I mean, to sum it up, in this gunslinger moment, this face-off moment, really you have somehow to believe that God's will for you is entirely good. But sometimes it isn't easy, is it? Sometimes it isn't easy when you go with just God's will, because things don't turn out the way that you tried to control them. But when you try to control them, do they always turn out the way you want them to either? But when God is in control, when we relinquish control, it's amazing how, although we may suffer very difficult things, it's amazing how he steps in and makes something amazing out of it. So, into this moment we find ourselves. Now, I thought about this for a little bit, and I thought, how could I describe, what do I ultimately want? What is it that I would be grabbing for in life if I know that when I try to control things, that I'm removing God from the equation, and I'm doing it usually out of fear for what could go wrong? What's something that's on the other side? What could happen if you truly follow God? What is an example where you follow God so beautifully that something amazing is on the other side of that pain? Well, I would invite you, if you have your Bibles in your seat backs, which you do, to use a Bible. If you're in the front row, you can just reach back and snatch one. And turn to 2 Corinthians, which I believe is on page I'm looking for, 668. It's at the very top left column. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. And Paul is describing what he's been through following God. Now keep in mind, he's given up all the lucrative lifestyle that he could have. All the power and control that he had as a Pharisee in that region, he's given it all up. Would we do that for God? What has he faced in return? He says in verse 4, but as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way by great endurance in afflictions, hardships, calamities, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labors, sleepless nights, hunger, by purity, knowledge, patience, kindness, the Holy Spirit, genuine love, by truthful speech and the power of God, with the weapons of righteousness for the right hand and for the left, through honor and dishonor, through slander and praise, we are treated as imposters and yet are true, as unknown and yet well known in dying. And behold, we live as punished and yet not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making many rich, as having nothing yet possessing everything. Let me put up that last part for you. What is it like to follow God? We're treated as imposters and yet are true, as unknown and yet well known, as dying and behold we live, as punished and yet not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making many rich, as having nothing and yet possessing everything. James tells us, don't just run off and do this, telling you your life is a mess. Instead, follow God's will. I wish then he'd said, go look at my brother Paul. He will tell you, he had everything. And yet when he followed God, all this came. And the result of it is, I possess everything. I experience the joy of walking in the footsteps of God. It's so hard to relinquish control. It is so hard. Now, I would say this. As we were working on this on Tuesday, it occurred to me that maybe you're not a future planner the way some are, but there's something. There's something each and every one of us that if you could see it, you know, like with some transparent, a camera that can read transparently in your mind, there's something there that when it gets to trusting God, your default is, no, God, I've got this one. We all have something. So maybe you're not the future money-making planner, but there's something. There's something that you're holding on to, something that fear and control are ruling in your life. And what is the result of fear and control? They steal joy from the right now in your life. That's what fear and control do. The area or areas that you say, God, I've got this, there's something there that grabs hold of you and it doesn't allow you to experience the right now. Remember, he says, sorrowful yet always rejoicing. And all of these things, I'm still possessing everything. How is that possible? We do everything in our lives to avoid anything that could go wrong. We do everything we can. God, I've got this. I'm pretty sure I can do this better than you. We're not saying that directly, but you might as well. God, I think I've got this. I've got this a little bit better than I think you can do it, right? That's what we probably end up saying. So I have one more question for you then. I must ask you a question. How can we guard rail against the temptation to control our outcomes, but instead, by placing trust in God, be able to enjoy and experience the moments that are right here and right now? How can we do that? Because when you are planning, when you are always thinking and worrying about the future, you can't possibly enjoy the moment right now. So what do we do to protect this, to guardrail ourselves against this? I always start off the same way, so I'll do it again. You need to become keenly aware of the way in which you are trying to control the outcomes of your life. There's something you're doing. As I said earlier, there's something or some things in your life that you might as well just say to God, I got this. Don't you worry a single moment, God. I'm pretty sure I've got this better than you. years ago, I found that when we moved into the town that we lived in, my oldest was decided kind of later, hey, I think I'd like to join soccer. What do you do when you join a little bit later in a town that you're not from? Well, you get placed on any old team that's left. And they lost every single game. It was awful. Then we played another year, but I tried to get him on a different team, but then the coordinator said, if you want him on another team, you're going to have to coach it. So I said, okay, fine, I'll coach it. And I quickly learned soccer as best I could. And the season was a little bit better. But I realized as I was there, you start to notice in your town sports that there are those who get the system and there are those who don't. And you're just kind of piddling around wondering what you're doing. And then there are those who just, they know the system and they work the system really well. And so I began to educate myself because I had a son who I could see what was going to happen is the very next year, the disparity between the best coached kids and those who are coached by Rob, the disparity was going to be larger. And then pretty soon, these kids over here would be on a couch playing video games. Something had to happen. And so that's where I got involved and joined in some of the decision-making. I said, it's my personal quest that every kid at every age gets the best possible coaching for the best possible chance to stay in this game for the longest amount of time to avoid them getting discouraged and just sitting around the couch while 10 or 12 kids are celebrated all the way through. That was my goal. That's still my goal. In the midst of that, first time my son ever went to try out for sports or went to try out for a team, he went. We didn't have, we were fairly new to the system. I was starting to learn it, but not enough. And he went and he tried out and the letter came back and he made the lowest team. In fact, the letter said, congratulations. You made didn't say the lowest team, but we knew. And he was so discouraged. But we sat down and we prayed about it. We sat down and talked about it. And we sat down and said, well, why don't you just commit to this year? Work your tail off. Work hard. You see, it's in that situation that now a whole year, two seasons had to go by, which he was playing at a level, and all his friends, you know, that were old, or not older, but old, his friends and other teams liked to tease him about it. Oh, you're on that team, you're on that team. And he got really discouraged, but he worked really hard. And I share that because there are times which I would like to get in and control the situation. I had just entered into enough power in a board-like situation to possibly pull some strings, possibly do some things that I could grease the system a little bit, get my kid into a better situation. I could have. So we're always in situations where we want to control. We're always in situations that if given the chance, maybe if I just help. Why? Because we're trying to, you know, it's best played out when we're trying to protect our children. Teacher gives them a bad grade, we go and fight it. A coach puts them on a bad team and we go and fight it. Why? Because we think we're helping. But I didn't. Not the hero of the story. I just want you to hear the outcome. I didn't. And all year we worked on it. And all year he committed to it. Figured out how to do the tryouts and figured out what to do. And so he went to tryouts that next year, hoping to make not the C team, but the B team. A month later, we got the letter. Congratulations. You made the A team. Now, that kid will tell you, after he leapfrogged, all these friends in the B team are like, what? It's not fair, right? He just put his head down. He worked hard. That kid will tell you the moment that I didn't control was one of the most defining moments of his growing up years. You see, we want to control. Oh, it'd be best if I just took control and helped him get into a situation where he's not hurt. That is not the solution. So identify, become keenly aware of the areas in which you try to control and fix and grease and help and situations which you think, well, I just should probably step in here because this person shouldn't go through this discouragement. Wrong. wrong. It's about trusting in and not controlling. And so is it your job? Is it your parents? Is it your relationships? Is it your kids, your grandkids, your finances? What are you trying to control that you're saying to God, I've got this? I don't think you understood he shouldn't be on the C team. God, I don't think you saw it. Maybe you were looking the other way. I'll take control. When we do that, we ruin moments in which God can do amazing things. Secondly, walk directly into your greatest fears. That list of things that I just had, your job. Let's say you started a business. You're worried all the time. Maybe the best thing for you is just write down what could go wrong. Write down the worst situation that could ever come up. Write down exactly what you think, how the rails could go off, how the track, the wheels could go off the track, how could everything could fall apart. Go ahead, go into the darkest cave. Or with your kids, go into the darkest place of what you think is the worst thing that could ever happen to them. Drive yourself into that point and write it down, or just say it out loud, or own it in your head, because we have to walk directly into those fears. You identify what it is that you're scared about and you own it. And that, when you walk directly into the darkness, it allows you to say, well, at least I have today. Today is the day that I invest. Today is the day that I give my love. How many of you have ever sat on a beach? Supposed to be the great day at the beach. You went to the beach. You're so excited about the beach, right? You get there, you sit down, you open up your book, and you're like, what are we doing for dinner? What are we going to do for dinner? So stressed about this. Because, what time are we going to be leaving? Because I got to know what time we leave, because got to make sure we have dinner, and then I got to make sure everybody gets in bed. Because Tomorrow is a busy day. Tomorrow we have all sorts of things. I got to make sure that I get everything right. And you live your lives. How many of you can say that you can't enjoy the beach the whole day because you're stressed about the next day? Has anybody ever had that? Oh, wow. Yeah, look at all the hands. Exactly. The hands were not like this. Oh, me, right? Their hands were like this. Right? Because you know that you're the one that's sitting there next to the person next to you, man, and like stealing the moment. When you do this, when you walk directly into the darkness, into the place which you hold as most fearful, and just say, yes, it's possible I could lose my child. It happens. Therefore, the worst possible scenario, the worst things that could come to your head, therefore, right now I haven't, and I am going to own this moment to the greatest of my abilities. I'm going to invest the most into my parents. I'm going to invest the best into my friendships right now, today, because I cannot control the future. And when you are controlling the future and suddenly it spins out of control, all those moments you lost. Third, Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verses 14 and 15. There's something else meaningless that occurs on earth. The righteous who get what the wicked deserve, and the wicked who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless. He's gone on and on about things that just seem unfair, things that seem wrong. And then he finally says, the writer says, so I commend the enjoyment of life. New Living Translation says, I say, go have fun. In other words, seize the moment, right? Because there is nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of the life God has given them under the sun. Embrace the moment. I had a friend text me the other day. He's on a little getaway with his wife. You know what he wrote to me? This guy, everywhere I go to hang out with this guy, why I like hanging out with him, everywhere we go, he'll stop and literally do this. This is amazing. He wrote, I'm away with my wife for the day or for a couple days. And in caps, he said, I'm the luckiest guy on earth. That guy lives for the moment. And I would say, eat, drink, and be glad when you are with friends and loved ones. Own that moment. Don't be drifting off into trying to control your future. So grab hold of it right now and embrace it. Finally, lastly, on this list, comes from Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, a verse that maybe, if you haven't already, it'd be a great verse to memorize. It's just a discipline. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will make straight your paths. In other words, trust God, for his will for you is entirely good. Become keenly aware and walk directly into the greatest fears. Grab hold of this moment right now and embrace it. Trust God. Really, it's about living right now. No matter what God has dealt you, no matter what has gone wrong, no matter where you are today, even if you failed this for the last 40 years of your life, or 10 years or whatever, this is your moment to step into and embrace right now because something beautiful is unfolding in front of you. I'll close with this. When I'm done with this story, worship team, you can come up. I've seen a glimpse of this. I've seen a glimpse that if you face your worst fears, it's possible, if you're a survivor in that, that you come out the other side and something beautiful can happen. A number of years ago, I was in Rwanda around the 10-year anniversary of the Holocaust that took place. To give you some idea about this amazing place, it is so gorgeous. Yes, it's landlocked. It's a tiny, tiny country in Africa. It has two primary, they call them tribes, but for you and me, let's say it's two primary people groups. One is far larger than the other, but the other has control of the government and control at the time they did in the 1990s, and educated, and yet the other group, which made up about 70% of the country, was reduced to less education, reduced to less opportunities, at least that's the argument. And so it came to a head in 1994. In 100 days, the incalculable happened. Almost 1 million people were killed. And a great percentage of it happened through machete. I mean, this was just an all-out war going one way. And in this, so I was there 10 years later. And the stories, of course, I could never share here. It just wouldn't be appropriate. But one of the first days I was there, we went into this place and met these women who sat around in a circle. And myself and my travel team from our church and another church were there. And these women who sat around in a circle in this facility graciously let me take their pictures. There were other women. But we sat there for hours while each of these women stood up and told their survival stories. My life, struggling to find like fresh bread in my shelf or some stale cereal. I mean, like, what have I really faced? When these stories start to unfold, these women had been gathered together here as survivors. One particular woman stands out to me, stood up and through a translator, told the story of how a young man in his duty in those 100 days had broken into their home and through force and sword killed her husband and her 5 children. Somehow, in the midst of this, although she was stabbed, she survived. When it was over and reconciliation over the next couple of years began to be the theme, like, we have to heal. We have to heal. This man who lived in that area, people knew who these people were. I mean, they lived amongst the people that killed them. Somehow he was brought back into this woman's space, of which she mustered up the courage to forgive him as he sought forgiveness. And she says, today, this man now, she calls her child. You see, what's amazing about these stories is it somehow, if your worst fears are out there and you're a survivor through it, you'll find that what you will discover is that somehow God will do something amazing. You taking control, you somehow grabbing hold of this, of the reins, saying, God, I've got this, is to your peril. It is a situation in which you take control and don't get to experience some of the most amazing things, where Paul says something like, now I have everything. Relinquishing control, allowing yourself to embrace God's leading in your life, listening for his leading rather than reacting like seagulls to the bag of chips. You become a true follower of Jesus Christ. Let's pray. Father, in the midst of our struggles in life, in the midst of the things that we face, there are times in which we do believe we have a better grip on how things should go, and then we lose a sense of the moment that sits right before us now. May we become a church that does two things. One, begins to relinquish control to you, and two, begin to live in the moment right now that you've made available to us. In Jesus' name, amen.